Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We're in the final four segments of our time spent with Phil Imbrogno and only capturing the surface here. There's a lot more to cover. He's author of a book called Files from the Edge, a paranormal investigator's explorations into high strangeness. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. Okay, Phil, a lot of people who get involved in exploring UFO research say, you know, it's E.T. is coming here to land. That's all it is. All this other stuff is mumbo-jumbo. We don't want to deal with it. What's your response to them?
Well, you know, people, you know, in the paranormal, whether it's involved with UFOs or ghosts, the ghost hunters are to say it's all ghosts. I mean, you know, the religious fanatics saying it's all demons and devils. The people who are involved with UFOs saying it's all aliens with the technology from another dimension. I believe that what we're seeing as the UFO phenomena is a multifaceted phenomenon. There's not one answer for it. I think we're seeing many different things, many different types of phenomena, and trying to put one label on it, depending upon what you want to believe and what you want this to represent to yourself. I think one of the, you know, the people who are involved with the paranormal that have the blinders on, so to speak, are the UFO investigators. And most of the people from MUFON and some of the other organizations, the smaller organizations, you know, they're out there looking for alien spacecraft. And everything is an alien spacecraft to them. You know, there may be other explanations for the appearance of a lot of the things that we're seeing as UFOs, not just alien spacecraft. Even though I admit that a certain percentage of the sightings may be alien spacecraft, but I believe also that a certain percentage has a different origin, a different explanation.
So where is the line of demarcation? How do you separate E.T. from who knows what?
Well, you can't, because most of the time you're taking the person who had the experience, their word. If the person is, you know, convinced that they saw an extraterrestrial spaceship, when they're telling you their story, they'll try to focus on that they had an E.T. encounter. If a person has religious beliefs, they're going to try to convince you in when they're relating their story to you that they had an encounter with an angelic entity or some type of, you know, supernatural being. If a person is really believes in ghosts and they're into all this ghost hunting and everything, their UFO experience to them might represent the manifestation of some type of, you know, ectoplasmic spirit. So it depends upon, you know, who you talk to and how they represent, how they relate the sighting to you. So you really have to go around that and just try to get the description and the information. And basically what you say is that, really, I don't care what you think you saw. I want to know exactly what you saw, not what you think you saw.
But is it also possible that this phenomenon, whatever it might be, manifests itself in a way that the particular witness interprets it in a certain way, so you don't know what the source is because they're seeing it through their eyes, their expectations, their experience?
Oh, this is true. You know, if we're dealing with an intelligence, for example, that, you know, considers us, you know, second-rate, you know, citizens of the universe, they may not want to represent themselves in their true form or true fashion. So they will manifest according to what the person wants to see. And when we talk about this, we get into the idea once again of the trickster and the aspect of a dimensional entity that has been mentioned for over 1,000 years or longer called the Jinn, which means hidden, means they live in another dimension, they interact with humans, but they never represent their true nature to us.
And you're writing a book on the Jinn, too, that's coming out here soon,
Actually,
I remember.
It's coming out in March of 2011. It's called The Vengeful Jinn, and it takes the Islamic legends of the Jinn with the Native American legends of the trickster, combining it with paranormal experiences of today and UFO experiences of today, and putting it all together, indicating that, you know, what we're seeing these manifestations could be the result of dimensional beings, and these dimensional beings have been known since ancient times. They were called in the Arabic world jinn, which means hidden, which means they're hidden from our view. To me, back then, to people back then, it meant they were invisible. To me and people today, it means that they're in another dimension that we cannot see. Quite exciting.
Now, let's go back in the past here when you first started investigating the subject. Was there a point where you said, you know what, it's not just E.T., it has to be more? Was it J. Allen Hynek talking about high strangeness or what? Because I remember in those years, late 70s, I interviewed Dr. Hynek, and this was maybe a couple of years before he died. And he was talking to me and hinting very broadly that there was more to UFOs than just E.T. Where was your point of expansion, shall we say?
Well, I think in the 70s, I was more or less focused on the idea of E.T. and spaceships from another world. And, I have a background in astronomy as well as chemistry. So, the idea of extraterrestrials fascinated me. The more I got involved with the UFO experience, the UFO investigations, the more I began to realize there was another element to this whole thing that involves something different than a nuts and bolts spaceship with extraterrestrials on some type of scientific mission here. There was something else involved. And I think by about 1984 or 5, I began to realize that extraterrestrial spaceships cannot account for the entire UFO experience. I had long conversations with Alan Hynek, and he was very conservative about what he would say in public, but he was totally convinced by about 1984 that these extraterrestrial spacecraft that everybody thinks they're seeing are actually something from a parallel reality, which he called. And he said something to me that was kind of shocked me. And we all know, people who are involved in UFO investigation and the paranormal, that John Keel has been talking about dimensional beings since the 60s. And Alan Hynek was one of John Keel's biggest critics. But Alan Hynek said to me about 2 years before he passed over, he said, I think John Keel was right about this whole thing. When I called John and told him that, John almost fell off in his chair. He said, you got to be kidding me. He said that. I said, yeah, John. He said, you were right all along on this stuff.
All right. So we're not ufologists, we're demonologists, I think is how Keel would have put it.
Well, John had a lot of interesting comments about the UFO phenomena. He believed that, a lot of this was dimensional in nature, but the UFO people who investigated just UFOs and were looking for spaceships, he called them, I think, what was one of his words, the lepers of the paranormal.
They sure loved him because of that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure they did. But he was a fascinating guy. He had some stories that would either make you look at him and wonder, or you'd be rolling on the floor laughing.
I mean, you had a Bigfoot thing encounter in Thailand. You want to talk about that just briefly, and also some of the strange hairy humanoid reports that cropped up in within sight almost of one of the largest urban areas of the world. You would care to go into that just briefly?
Yeah, I can go into it. I've had an interest in the paranormal since I was like who knows how young, and I used to read all the books about it and get all the UFO magazines, and in the late 60s I went into the military, and I was in the Vietnam War, and to make a long story short, I heard stories when I was in Thailand from Thailand about a large hairy creature that existed in an area in northern Thailand. And so I went out there to investigate. I mean, I used to travel all over the place there. I mean, I wouldn't do something like that now. But
we'll look into the hairy creature in a moment, Phil. We're going to look at the hairy creature. We have Phil Imbrogno joining us this week. Co-host is Christopher O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast.
Yeah.
Hey, neighbors, have you been thinking about starting a website? Well, I'm going to tell you about a great offer from HostGator. HostGator is a world-famous leader in web hosting, and they make it easy for you to get your own .com domain name. You create your very own website with their free site builder tools and great selection of templates. Use the coupon code PowerCast. Once again, use the coupon code PowerCast and sign up at this special address, thepowercast.com/gator. That's G-A-T-O-R, thepowercast.com/gator. For 58 years, Fate has provided true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate brings you the latest in all aspects of the paranormal, like angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, and much, much more. To receive your complimentary Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
As many people know, ever since President Nixon took us off the gold standard, the U.S. dollar has been devaluing. What people don't know, however, is how this directly affects your personal finances. Is there a way to prevent your portfolios from losing value? The answer to all of this is gold and silver. They've both maintained their purchasing power for 6,000 years. If you had had $100,000 in cash and $100,000 in gold and silver back in 1913 and kept them both until now, your cash would actually have the buying power of only $4,800, but your gold and silver would have the buying power of $3 million. The answer to protecting your assets is simple. Call me, John Ballman, today at 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Get all your questions answered before your money is worth zero. Call 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Take action today while we still accept paper dollars for gold. That's 1-800-686-2237, extension 169.
You worry, but only because you're paying attention. What's happening in the Gulf of Mexico illustrates an audacity toward nature. A similar audacity called GMO, or genetically modified organisms, means that the quality of commercially grown food may be compromised with our health in the balance. Now that summer's here, what better time to learn about the bounty that nature provides in wild edible food? Let author Linda Runyon show you the best-kept secret in plain sight that food is everywhere you look. This summer, for the cost of a good meal or two out, you can literally starvation-proof yourself and your loved ones against any future craziness and put up tons of free food, too. Whatever experiment is being run on us, you can rest assured that Linda's 50 or so staple foods aren't involved. Our foods are their enemy. So go to ofthefield.com or call toll-free 1-888-51-EAT-FREE and take that first step. Make your oasis of food security and nutrition now. That's OFTHEFIELD.com or call 1-888-513-2837. Start now and make 2010 your year of independence.
Before you throw away your used batteries, you need to listen to this. Now, going green can save money. Go green and save money by giving life to your used batteries by charging them with the Renaissance Charger. The Renaissance Charger uses a new revolutionary battery charging technology that effectively extends the life of new batteries and gives new life to used batteries. Invented by legendary audio genius John Bedini, this unique and patented charging system rejuvenates the electrochemical plate structure in the battery without additives, increasing capacity and maintaining cell integrity. Renaissance Charge offers a full line of products made in the USA for all types and sizes of batteries. Find out why our customers tell us the Renaissance Charger is the only battery charger they will ever use. Save your money. Save the environment. Visit us online at r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com or call us at 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514. Be a part of the revolution today.
10 years. Genesis. A decade of talk. Genesis. Great talk radio is here on the Genesis Communications Network.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
We left you with a cliffhanger there. Phil Imbrogno is going to talk about a hairy creature he tried to chase down or learn more about during his service during the Vietnam War. We have co-host Christopher O'Brien with us. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the PowerCast. So, on our previous session, you left it open there. What did you find out about the hairy creature, Phil?
Well, I journeyed up to an area called Phi Mai in northern Thailand. And I went into the village, and to the outskirts of the village, there are these ancient ruins that are like 1800 or 1600 years old. And the villagers say that every night they bring flowers and food into the temple because the hairy man comes down from the hills with his family, and he takes the food. And they leave the food there because they don't want any problems. Because according to the stories, 50 years prior to that time, this was like in the 60s, so 50 years prior to about 1968, the hairy man, which is described as sort of like a Bigfoot-like creature, what we would call Sasquatch or Bigfoot or Yeti or the Himalayas, came into the village and stole food and took two young girls and took them back, took them out in the forest and abducted them, and they were never seen again. Because of that incident, because of that story, of course, the villagers would tell their children, unless you're good, you know, the hairy man's going to come down and take you. So the hairy man has gotten the reputation over the years in that village, sort of like the American boogeyman. But I mean, I was spending the day exploring the temple, and it was fascinating with all the carvings and everything like that. And as nightfall came, it started to get dark. I was told I better leave the ruins at nightfall because the hairy man comes down. And, of course, this fascinated me. But, you know, I have to admit, you know, that walking through those dark corridors at sunset, going around the corner, I was expecting to see something. And I have to tell you, you know, I kind of like chickened out a little bit and kind of left. But as I was leaving out to the main entrance, I heard something heavy coming through the jungle walking. And I kind of retreated out because I really didn't know what I was dealing with. And I was alone. And I came to the beginning of the entrance to the old temple, to the ruins, and a number of villagers were there, and they had flowers and they had food. And they were going to bring it into the main corridor, and I said, well, I want to see this thing. And they said, no, you cannot see him, because if you look at him, you will die. So they were bringing food. They told me I was crazy because I wanted to go in there with the flashlight and just try to see this thing, pick up the food. And they wouldn't let me in. And I had to spend the night at the village, so I didn't want to upset any of the elders or any of their customs. I didn't want to get kicked out into the jungle at night. So they left the food, they came out, and they said he was in there. They saw a shadow, and they ran out, and they were very frightened. And we went back down to the village, which was about a half a mile or so walk down the path. They put me up in a family's home. The Thai people are very friendly, by the way, very friendly to strangers. It's part of the Buddhist religion. Most of the people in Thailand are Buddhist. And I stood in this home, and I could hear sounds coming from the ruins. And they didn't sound like animals, and they didn't sound human. They sounded something in between, and it sounded like there was about three of them. Anyway, this went on to about 4 o'clock in the morning. The next day, I said to the elders, I said, you know, I want to come back and spend the night at the temple, but I want to bring two of my friends. And first they were objecting and so on. They said, fine, but if you bring any weapons, you have to leave them there. You can't bring any weapons because if you harm one of the creatures, one of the hairy man's family, he'll take revenge on us. So I said, fine. So after, you know, going through a whole bunch of stuff through the military, all this stuff you have to go through, you know, going around in circles and so on, hurry up and do this and wait and so on. I finally talked two of my buddies into coming back with me. And we made it up there. We had a few days off, and we made it up there. And as we're traveling through, you know, which back then was a jungle road into this village of Phi Mai. Today it's a modern road, I hear. We had weapons on us. And we came to the village and, you know, we introduced ourselves, and the elders of the village and the shaman of the village made sure, the priest of the village made sure we laid our weapons down. And he only allowed us a flashlight and so on to go into the area. So we went into the area and we camped outside on a terrace. And we bought sleeping bags and so on, and flashlights. And back then they only had the dry cells. You know, they didn't have alkaline cells back then, so we wanted to conserve the energy. All of a sudden, you know, about midnight or so, everything's quiet, and I hear a storm rolling in. And we sort of like move our sleeping bags back to the entrance where the terrace is, where the temple is. And all of a sudden it starts raining, and it's raining hard. And we hear something in the jungle walking towards us in the dark. And we're shining the light into the jungle, and there's nothing. And every time we shine the light into the jungle, the noise would stop. We turn the light off, it would start approaching us again. So one of the persons I was with, he was from Tennessee, and the other one was from West Virginia. So these were two wild, crazy guys. The rain started coming down so hard, and the thunder was going on so hard, and the flashlights all of a sudden were dying. And this is what I couldn't explain back then, that even though we had fresh batteries in there, we changed the batteries, the power was being drained. Today, we see this quite a bit in paranormal investigations. Electrical batteries and so on and power supplies drain quite quickly in a paranormal area. So all of a sudden, I'm back into the temple area, and the guy from Tennessee, his name was Fussell, his last name, he's yelling. And standing next to him, he's staring at this large shape. From where I was, I could just see a silhouette. And the other person, Charlie, who's from West Virginia, he's looking at this shape also. And this thing looks at us, and it has, like, yellow eyes. Well, it seemed like it was a very, very long time, but it was a very short sighting. The guy from Tennessee, Fussell, was going, you know, what are you? What are you? What are you? And by the time we started making noise, this thing just jumped as if it was on a trampoline right back into the forest. But when it went into the jungle area, it didn't even make a noise like it was landing. It just almost floated down into it. And Fussell was walking up and down, acting like an orangutan. And I said, what are you doing? He says, I'm trying to get the thing out. Maybe it'll come out if I act like an ape. He thought it was a big, giant ape. Anyway, so, you know, he's going, you know, acting like an orangutan, walking up and down the terrace. And in the woods, we see three pairs of eyes. So, you know, six yellow areas, three pairs of eyes. And Charlie's getting upset. He's yelling at me, why did we leave our guns?
I'll tell you what, before we find out what happened next, Phil Imbrogno joining us, author of Files from the Edge. We're talking now about a close encounter with strange creatures. Who knows? Our co-host, Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the PowerCast.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Fortean phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to Mr. UFO at webtv.net. That's Mr. UFO at webtv.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Global meltdowns, massive unemployment, endless wars, a new currency crisis, financially and morally bankrupt. A great and terrible storm is approaching. So what's the best way to get ready? To get prepared for hard times ahead. Introducing Off the Grid News, a weekly newsletter for independent patriots who want practical advice on how to survive and prosper in an increasingly dangerous world. It's the best way to get a black belt in emergency preparedness, survival skills, and off-the-grid living. Off the Grid News is fiercely independent, all about self-reliance, and packed with helpful information on survival gardening, food preparation, alternative energy, herbal medicines, privacy and security, as well as God, gold, and guns, with absolutely no apologies. fees. And the best part? This $100 a year service is now free of charge for our listeners. That's right, free for our listeners who sign up at offthegridnews.com. That's offthegridnews.com. You can sign up for free at offthegridnews.com. Offthegridnews.com.
Your natural organic herbal formula for heart health is Heart and Body Extract.
My name is Van, and I'm 68 years old, and I live in Vermont. In the spring of 2003, I started to have problems with my heart. It felt like my heart was pounding. It made me feel breathless. I tried many, many different things to try to get some help for myself. Nothing did anything.
Heart and Body Extract is very powerful, very effective, and works quickly.
I saw one of Sharon's ads and ordered Heart and Body Extract. I noticed a difference quickly, within days. The episodes became less frequent, and by a month had completely vanished.
Usually you find a 30-day or 60-day guarantee. Heart and Body Extract comes with a lifetime 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. Call 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
Attention, an important product from hempusa.org, microplant powder, will change your life by removing all types of positive toxins, such as heavy metals, parasites, bacteria, viruses, and fungus from the digestive tract and stomach wall so you can absorb nutrients. Microplant powder is 89% silica and packed with a negative charge that attracts positive toxins from the blood, organs, spine, and brain. This product has the ability to rebuild cartilage and bone, which allows synovial fluid to return to the joints. Silica is a precursor to calcium, meaning the body turns silica into calcium and is great for the heart. There is no better time than now to have microplant powder on your shelf or in your storage shelter. And with an unlimited shelf life, you can store it anywhere. Call 908-691-2608 or visit hempusa.org. It's a great way to change your life. So call 908-691-2608 or visit us at hempusa.org today.
Tired of searching for great talk radio?
There's a wide range of stuff on here.
We are the GCN Radio Network. Genesis.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
We have Phil Imbrogno with us, stuck in Southeast Asia, seeing weird creatures. What? Co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. So what happens next? You left your weapons behind? You dared to do
well,
that?
Well, they were in the village with the elders because the elders knew that these guys would have shot the thing.
Uh-huh,
right. This creature was sacred to them. It was a spirit to them. They considered it a spirit who came into our world.
Don't shoot my Bigfoot.
Well, that's sort of it. You know, over there, they consider these creatures to be sacred animals. They were like spirits, and you don't mess around with them. Anyway, it's pouring rain. You have to imagine. The lightning is flashing all over the place, and it's pouring raining. I mean, the rain is coming down really, really, really hard. And this guy, he's just marching up and down and making sounds like a monkey trying to get these things out of the forest again because he wanted to get a better look at them. And we see three pairs of yellow eyes in the forest. So Charlie, the guy from West Virginia, is yelling at me, why did we leave our weapons on? These things are going to get it. He picks up a big stone and throws it into the woods. And it, like, hits something that sounded like a dense body or something, a thump. As he did that, the eyes just disappeared. And we did not hear anything for the rest of the night. Now, the next day, when we went back down to the village and told the elders what we saw, the elders were quite upset that this happened to us. And he questioned both Charlie and myself, and Fossil looked at this creature right in the face. He said it was about 8 feet tall. It had red hair all over its body. And Fossil was about 6'2". So this thing dwarfed him. I just saw the outline of a dark shape. And he said it had yellow eyes. Charlie also looked in its eyes, but I really didn't. The elder of the village told him that the story is if you look at this creature directly in your eyes, you will die within 6 months. Do you know, we left the village, and both Charlie and Fossil died within 6 months from combat wounds. But I was fine.
Did
Did you check for any physical evidence there at the site? Were there any footprints?
Any? Couldn't find anything. So about a month after that incident, I had an R&R, rest and relaxation, and I went to Bangkok. And I stopped at Bangkok University, and I talked to a professor there. I got his name in the book. Couldn't even pronounce it, a long Thai name. And I told him about our sighting up in the Phi Mai ruins, and he said that it was possible that we had an encounter with an orangutan. I said, wait a minute. I thought you orangutans are not in common.
Not an eight-foot one.
He said, at one time, he said orangutans were in Thailand, but they became extinct. But nobody knows for sure. There may be some surviving families of orangutans in the jungle. I told him, well, I said, this thing was, you know, dwarfed. My friend Fossil, who was 6 foot two, I think must have been about 8 feet tall. He started laughing and saying, well, maybe the lightning and the rain kind of like gave the illusion that it was so big and so on and so on. And he started talking about Gigantopus, the ancestor of the orangutan, which was 8 foot tall, that was known to live in that area because fossils were found. But he laughed and didn't think that any of them were alive today. And sort of like, he kind of like said that, well, maybe you probably did encounter some type of ape or something, and the lightning just made everything look bigger. Didn't really take the story seriously, like thanked him and, you know, left the university and went on with my vacation in Thailand.
And no government agents came to you and said, Phil, don't do that?
No. Nobody would. Today, for example, I did some research on that area, and the Phi Mai ruins are now a country park. It's a country site. People visit there all the time. The small village now has grown to almost city proportion. They even have a McDonald's there. And the road that was once a dirt road leading up to the small village, which was only about 8 buildings, is now a paved road with bus traffic going back and forth so people can visit the ruins. And I wonder about, you know, the story of the hairy man. I mean, you know, has it just become legend there? Of course, nothing has been spotted since the 1970s.
Maybe they fled because they didn't like all the progress and all the machines and everything.
Or
well,
big
I'm
mass.
Sure. I'm sure that's what, you know, a lot of the local residents or the old timers believe, that the hairy man just left and went back to his world.
Well, how about the hairy man in the Hudson Valley region? I'm sure some of our listeners would be surprised to learn that. That Bigfoot is apparently alive and well in the Hudson Valley region. There's quite a number of sightings, well, a number of them that you mentioned in Files from the Edge. What is your feeling about that?
You know what? I don't know. If this is a creature that's left over from the Ice Age, walking around in some of the more crowded areas, it's got to be seen or shot by somebody. For example, there are Bigfoot sightings over in the Catskills, and there are Bigfoot sightings in Connecticut. There are Bigfoot sightings in Rhode Island. There are Bigfoot sightings in places of southern New York. So, for example, and they go back to the 1800s. I found stories in newspapers of Bigfoot sightings that date back to the 1880s in Connecticut, in Winsted. Back then, they called these creatures the wild men of the forest. But today, they're Bigfoot sightings. So if these things are like physical creatures, as we would consider physical creatures, something left over from the Ice Age, they're seen for a period of time, they disappear, and where do they go? Perhaps they are some type of dimensional creatures that actually come through portals by accident or intention. I don't know.
Well, you know, they could also just be hiding in the woods. I mean, we don't have the capability of exploring every single space, every single location.
But the areas up in Connecticut where this thing was spotted since the 1885s, it's pretty well built up in that area. And
yeah,
there are
really
lots of hunters, and people are going, walking through the woods all the time. And you really can't hide something that big
well,
in
underground
area.
They do tend to be spotted in areas where there's underground cavern systems.
Well, that's true, too. And if they're living underground, who knows? A lot of paranormal phenomena, especially creature sightings, take place where there are underground caverns.
Now, one of the things I noticed in your book, and I guess this would be the sole point of disappointment, no photographs.
That was the publisher's idea.
Okay, because I remember there's this one chapter where you actually see something using a special now outmoded Kodak film.
Correct.
To check specific images in a specific portion of the visible spectrum. Okay. And unfortunately, no picture of it. Didn't show up in the book.
Yes, well, there was a picture, and the publisher decided that the reproduction of these pictures would be too expensive, and they decided to focus on the book being the files. And actually, I have the same publisher as Stan Romanek, and somebody made a comment about his book, Messages, Where Are the Pictures, Missing Pictures. He may have them, except the publisher really doesn't want to publish them because now they're looking for all super high resolution stuff because they're making these copies that really don't reproduce well. And this is why the pictures were taken out. I had like 25 images of paranormal stuff that had either been sent to me or that I had photographed in my research. And that was all kept out on by suggestion of the publisher because they felt it wouldn't reproduce properly. So if they kept out a few, they kept out all the pictures.
Yeah, but there are some really good graphs in the back where you actually look through your database for interesting correlations and patterns. And I do want to remind our listeners that this book is very, I think, very invaluable for a person that's interested in going out in the field and how to actually analyze your data. I was very impressed with some of the analytical work that you've done with your database.
We'll get into more of that in a moment about his analysis, and we'll try to bring things to a conclusion of one sort or another in our next section. We have Philip Imbrogno, author of Files from the Edge. The co-host is Christopher O'Brien, who has also spent a lot of time in the field investigating paranormal events. I'm right now not expecting a paranormal event anytime soon. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the PowerCast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Attack! Of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockaways, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
You've seen our SinoFresh banner on the GCN website,
yet your sinusitis is still a problem.
Are you waiting for your sinusitis to go away by itself?
Are you waiting for a SinoFresh discount?
Okay, here it comes.
But first, the facts.
67 other products merely treat symptoms,
and not the cause of sinus problems.
And 37 million Americans suffer from sinus distress just like you. But now many are finding relief with the only patent-protected homeopathic nasal product that antiseptically eliminates the known causes of sinusitis. SinoFresh.
Now, here's your limited-time discount offer to use SinoFresh.
Call 888-906-3636 right now for $2 off per bottle when you mention GCN. That's it. Just call 888-906-3636 and mention GCN for a $2 discount.
But hurry, this offer is only for the first 1,000 customers.
Call 888-906-3636. 888-906-3636. Call right now for $2 off per bottle.
Mention GCN.
Buy SinoFresh.com. It works.
No one likes foreclosure. You won't say, think, or even consider foreclosure with ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Why? Because ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com guarantees to stop your foreclosure for at least 2 years with no payments, no bankruptcy, and no negotiating. Thinking loan modification? That still keeps you in default. Zero Debt in 90 days is the only proven system that keeps you in your house for as long as you want to stay, while making it possible to even get clear title to your house. No, we are not investors, bankers, attorneys, attorneys or real estate agents. We are a group of people just like you that are sick and tired of the housing crash, and we've helped thousands avoid foreclosure since 1993. Please visit our website today, ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com, or call to see how we can help save you tens of thousands of dollars and save your home. Call 800-477-9256. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256. Or visit ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Guaranteed to stop foreclosure.
Before you throw away your used batteries, you need to listen to this. Now, going green can save money. Go green and save money by giving life to your used batteries by charging them with the Renaissance Charger. The Renaissance Charger uses a new revolutionary battery charging technology that effectively extends the life of new batteries and gives new life to used batteries. Invented by legendary audio genius John Bedini, this unique and patented charging system rejuvenates the electrochemical plate structure in the battery without additives, increasing capacity and maintaining cell integrity. Renaissance Charge offers a full line of products made in the USA for all types and sizes of batteries. Find out why our customers tell us the Renaissance Charger is the only battery charger they will ever use. Save your money. Save the environment. Visit us online at r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com or call us at 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514. Be a part of the revolution today.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
This is the Paracast. You never know what's going to happen next.
We have Phil Imbrogno, author of Files from the Edge, a paranormal investigator's explorations into high strangeness. And these things are quite strange. We have co-host Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. This is the last section. We don't have a lot of time, Phil. But maybe some advice for investigators who want to learn more. What can we do to eventually, if possible, prove any of this beyond just photographs that are difficult to reproduce and all the case histories? How can we prove completely once and for all what's going on?
Well, we're not going to be able to because individually we don't have the resources and we don't have the time to do this. You have to remember that 99% of the paranormal investigators out there are doing it in their spare time. They all have real jobs. And so the resources are greatly limited. I would say that what's needed is that a project has to be established. You take a number of people in the field of science that are, you know, involved with paranormal research, UFO research, and you give them a big budget. And, of course, you have to put them on a salary and say, this is your task, fellas. You have 5 years to study this whole thing and analyze everything, and you have, you know, almost unlimited resources. And after 5 years, you publish a paper or, you know, a big book on your findings. And you're to devote, you know, your full time to this and your expertise from your field. So you get a number of different people in different fields to work on it. And after 5 years, you produce your findings. I think if that's done, we will see a solution to this. But that's not going to be done because most of the researchers out there don't work together. They almost work in conflict. They conflict with each other. Egos are on the line and so on, and nobody really gets along. I mean, I don't even speak at UFO conferences anymore, even though I've been invited over and over again, because a couple of times I've been out to a conference, I've been accused of being a government plant, a government agent. And you have all of this paranoia going on, and people saying, well, I'm right, you're wrong, I'm right. Nobody's right, fellas, people out there, nobody's right. Nobody has a handle on this. Each investigator, each researcher is putting up pieces of information, and they have one piece of a giant picture puzzle. And they're trying to find out what the picture represents by looking at one piece. Until everybody gets together and puts all their pieces together, we're not going to find out what this, what all of this represents.
Hear, hear. A concerted team effort is the only way that we're going to move this whole shoot and match forward, and that's the only possible way that it could be moved forward. I've been saying this for years myself, and one of the reasons why my database is available to anybody who's interested enough to go through it is that I'm just hoping that somebody's going to find something in there that might be a piece of their particular puzzle, which might give them some insight into their particular investigative work. And I do absolutely agree with you 110% on that, Phil. The only way we're going to get through this and get any closer to any sort of explanation or gain better quality data is if we work together.
The thing I wanted to also point out here is that we do have lots of information that isn't even being made available. We did an episode a while back, Chris and I, with another guest, talking about this huge database that's available in separate file form, old-fashioned files, from APRO, an old-time UFO investigative body under lock and key, multiple file cabinets. And the people who have these file cabinets have done nothing. I know I asked our listeners if they'd be willing to participate in a petition to try to get a change, but unfortunately people aren't interested. So unfortunate.
Yes, well, you know, I remember the APRO files, and there's quite a bit of my information in there that's now under lock and key also. And Alan Hynek insisted that we contribute hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages to that particular file. And now it seems inaccessible.
I wanted to ask you, the Center for UFO Studies, the organization that Hynek had founded, is that still active anymore?
I don't believe it is. I think it's more or less closed its doors, primarily because of financial means and, I guess, interest, too. But I saw it falling apart after Alan Hynek separated from it.
Well, I think that's the other issue that we're concerned about here. How many organizations are there left? We have MUFON, but they're primarily an ET-based organization, although they get into other subjects. And lately they've had a few teething pains along the way. Where else do you go?
Well, you don't. There are individual investigators, individual researchers that, you know, are well known in particular areas in which who are collecting the information. But you have to remember, there are about 1,000, and that's probably a conservative method, of little local organizations of paranormal UFO researchers in little particular areas. So they're out there. They're all of these little groups, and some of them are way out there in left field. Boy, let me tell you.
I think some of the organizations that are devoted to disclosure, we have a lot of well-meaning people doing that and other people who are kind of wacky, to put it mildly.
What do you think of that,
Phil? Whenever you get something like this, you're going to have, all wacky people coming out of the woodwork. For example, during, the Hudson Valley case, the publication of Night Siege, in Night Siege we use real people's names, their real jobs and everything. We got permission to do this because people wanted to stand by what they saw. The downside of that, since their names were published in where they, the town they lived in and where they saw their sighting, many of these people were confronted and bothered by UFO wacko people that would come to their doors at all hours of the day and week and knock on their door and want to talk about their encounters with the aliens. And some of the witnesses called me and said, do you know so-and-so? He seemed kind of strange. I said, well, there are a lot of strange people out there.
Is that why, to put the long and short of it, is that why in most cases in your new book you do not have real names?
That's right. And many of the people who were pillars in the community, good witnesses who came forward that, really established that credibility, these people were hounded by what I would call the UFO cultist nuts. And I have second thoughts, about, even if a person says you may use my name and my town location, I still advise against it because of the people that are actually out there monitoring this that think they have to get involved.
Unfortunate. The book is called Files from the Edge by Philip J. Imbrogno, subtitled A Paranormal Investigator's Explorations into High Strangeness. Phil, we have about a minute left. Can you tell our listeners where to get a hold of you, if any place, and how to get a copy of the book?
Well, the book's in any bookstore. I mean, the best place to get it's on Amazon, of course, and they can call the publisher. They have a special deal on it now, 1-800-THE-MOON. And I can be reached at email. I don't have a website. Everybody's telling me, Phil, you got to get a website. Email is bel1313@yahoo.com. And I'm always open to people's experiences, because I'm still collecting reports and trying to analyze and make some sense of this whole thing.
Give that address out again a little bit slower so people can write it down.
It's Bell with one L, 1313@yahoo.com.
And hopefully there will be no spam there, because I wouldn't want to see you inundated with a lot of junk mail. Chris O'Brien, tell our listeners where they can find more of all the things that you work on.
Well, I do have a website. It's called Our Strange Planet, O-U-R, Strange Planet. It is a strange planet we live on. It's OurStrangePlanet.com. And my latest book, Stalking the Tricksters, of course, is available at Amazon, or you can get an autographed copy on my site. And I want to thank Phil for coming on the show. This has been a real pleasure for me. Phil, you're a real inspiration. Night Siege was very instrumental in my thinking early on as an investigator. Had my first UFO sighting up in New Paltz in 79. So always had real good interest in your work. And I really appreciate all that you've done over the years. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chris. For coming from you, that's a considerable compliment. Thank you.
Thanks, guys, for joining us this week on the PowerCast.
Okay, so long.
Thanks, Gene.
The PowerCast is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in the PowerCast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNLive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNLive.com. Again, that's GCNLive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.